Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm your co-host, Jeannie Rice, and we welcome you to the show. Today is Tuesday, July the 23rd, and we're going to hold that technology is going to act better today than it did yesterday. After about 30 minutes, we all got bumped off, and none of us could get back on. We tried to call back in real quick and kept getting busy signals, and we had no idea what was going on. I contacted Earth Angels, and they didn't know either, so let's just hold that it all stays smooth today. Our calling number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and your questions, because that makes this your show. We already have Dr. Tim with us. I think we have Rex with us. And but first, let's welcome Michael. Michael, are you there?
Oh, excuse me, my mute button. What can I say? Anyway. I was saying it's a delight to be here, and thank you for that introduction. I don't know if you're doing something different with your phone today, sweetheart, but it sounds like you're speaking out of a tin can. There's a big echo, so just let you know. Anyway, other than that, we are most apologetic for what happened yesterday. We still haven't gotten feedback from Blog Talk about what happened, but everybody got kicked out, and all we got were high-speed busy signals, so there was something going on with their phone system yesterday. And technology, what can you say? It's awesome when it works. I feel so blessed that we have this this opportunity to literally speak to the world and to document all of these wonderful ideas in the archives so that they're there for posterity. And once in a while there's a glitch, and so you bless it and love it and move on. So we're in the middle of a really wonderful discussion about healing and working with children. And so, I don't know, is Julie with us today? I know that she was on the road going to Branson, so she may not be on the show today. Is she by any chance with us? Are you with us, Jeannie? Hello, Jeannie. Is your mute button on?
No, I hung up and redialed in to see if it sounded any better than it was before.
Sounds much better. Much better.
Okay. And Julie is on. How are you doing, Julie?
Cool. Hello, Julie. Well, we're not hearing Julie.
Maybe she's not.
Let's say a hello to Dr. Tim. How do you be, sir? Anything exciting in your world at this moment?
I'm doing quite well, thank you.
Michael, you just disappeared.
Can you hear me, Jeannie?
I can hear you loud and clear, Tim.
Okay. Apparently, Jeannie can't.
Okay. Well, we're both dialed in, so the audience can hear us, I guess. Jeannie, are you there? Excuse our technology glitches. Anyway, Dr. Tim, what's happening for you? You're on because I can hear you and you can hear me, so let's move forward and see what opens up.
Well, I'm on. I'm doing very well here today, and the theme for today is purpose, personal power, and commitment.
Aha.
And I know you've probably heard about Neil Donald Walsh and Conversations with God.
Yes, I have.
Well, somebody sent me a link to some webinar he was doing, and the audio download of that is basically your version of, or his version of the idea that you espouse in purpose, personal power, and commitment. And
right.
What he's learned over years of struggling is that it's not all about the money and the toys and the job and the girl and the boy and the fabulous things you can acquire, but there are three steps you need to express your true self, your utmost self. You need to become aware of the fact that you are a soul. You need to connect with your soul and find out what your soul purpose is or your soul's agenda is, and then you need to pursue that in your daily life.
Yes.
Sounds familiar.
It is,
and
right on track.
That's basically what your lecture is about, with a more step-by-step approach to defining your secondary purpose. And that's a theme I've been talking with people about today, because it's been a deeply needed issue. So that's our theme.
Cool. Well, it's interesting how the world brainwashes us into being commercial servants in the pursuit of things in consuming, so that in consuming there's more money needed, more money to be spent, more profit made, and a kind of a pretty vicious cycle. And to wake up from that cycle and live as a human being and define and function out a purpose is an awesome thing to do. And, of course, for anybody who has an interest in that topic and goes, well, what is my purpose? How do I figure that out? Believe it or not, we have a worksheet. And if you go to www.whyagain.org, in the upper left-hand corner, you see a link that says Start Here. The initial links open up the whole forgiveness process. If you go further down that list, you'll see a worksheet for purpose. And it's pretty self-explanatory, pretty intuitive. And if you do that worksheet, it will help you to bypass the brainwash of the culture that tends to block. Basically, the thought I put out in that workshop is that the message of the culture is, you're just a chunk of protoplasm. You don't have a purpose. Go get a job and make money. It's silly to try and think there's something higher or that you have a higher purpose. What, that you're a human being, that means something other than being an ant or a bear? It's like, well, yeah, actually it does. We are in a different zone than that. And when we start functioning as true human beings, and of course we have an easy definition of a human being, hold a newborn child, you know exactly what a human is. Function as a human and know your purpose as a human, and things are going to shift and change. So that's kind of the direction we go with that workshop, and the worksheet is on the website, Purpose Worksheet. Actually, if you go, another way to find it is go to www.whyagain.org, and over on the right-hand side, you'll see a search bar. If you just put in the word purpose and click it, it'll take you right there to the worksheet. And if you have questions about it, you're welcome to call the show. And by the way, our call-in number is 646-200-4169. 646-200-4169. If you're on one of those stations where we can't see you through our control panel, then and you want to call in, you're certainly welcome to call in and ask your question. If you're on the phone queue and you push 1, that'll put you in queue to speak to us. So, Jeannie, are you with us?
I am, and I've got Rex turned on.
Oh, cool. Rex, do you have something to share with us, sir? How do you be today?
Wow, just fantastic. Blessed and highly favored is what you told me I could use. So I'm going to use it. I use
awesome.
It quite a bit. I love it. So Dan and I are here. The two of us were able to come to the prison today, and we did our first session. We had 57 inmates. And it was great. We had a great turnout. And we, rather than doing the DVD, I just did a brief introduction. Dan shared a few things. and then just went right through the worksheet. I did the entire worksheet, explained briefly the different steps, but really able to.
If you could get closer to your microphone, we'd hear you better. You're kind of fading in and out there. If you're on speakerphone, maybe you could take off the speakerphone and just speak directly into it. It would come across better, I think.
I did have my phone turned around backwards without realizing it. Is that better?
Oh, okay. That's better.
Yeah, that's called unconscious. I'm holding the phone to listen to what you guys are saying. So anyway, yes. So we did the step-by-step, went through the whole worksheet, got quite a bit of feedback from different inmates. It's interesting to see in living color and Dolby sound my consciousness being reflected back to me. Michael, you're going to be surprised by this, but I actually have one person who is a teacher that's telling me how I should be teaching.
No, you would never create that.
I was a little surprised myself, to be a little bit sarcastic, as we know what that means. So it was kind of interesting to watch that. He had quite a bit of feedback last time, and most of it was pretty good. This time his feedback was so far off that it just seemed to be almost irrelevant. Dan and I both read it. He said, well, you only got through 1C, and we did the whole worksheet. So what I observed was there were some parts for me in that, obviously, and seeing that, I get to see more of what I'm working with. But it was exciting, and we're going back, and we've got about 20-some prisoners of the level 2. And we delivered that you've got to do 3 worksheets from this point on, and boy, did we get a load of resistance. You know what the main theme was? They don't have time. They don't have enough time.
One of the most common drugs in the culture. So they're in prison, and they don't have time to do worksheets.
They don't have time to do worksheets. I looked at the gentleman, I said, well... He says, well, you know, you think we just sit around here and do nothing. And I said, well, I didn't have that thought, but if that's what you do, okay. He says, but you know, I already know all this material. I've been studying this stuff. I've been in here for 18 years. I really know what's going on. I know what's happening. I know what this is. And I got to see another part of myself there. And I went, oh, there I am again.
I love it.
And I just laughed, and I looked at him. I was really calm and outside, you know. I didn't let him see that I was laughing at myself, seeing him share with me about me, you know. And so as I'm watching this, I'm chuckling. I'm going, boy, here it is, all in front of me. So I got to see a lot, and I'm continuing to see a lot, but I thought the session went well. We got through the entire worksheet. From what I can tell, we are getting a wonderful response from the prisoners, and the response they're doing is they're seeming to really get that they're made in the image of pure love, and they're hearing it. I said it probably, what do you say, 10 or 15 times in the course of that time. I just keep saying it over and over and over again, and so that's really helpful. And I think Dan had something he wanted to share, so we're going to have to go in real shortly here, but I'm gonna give the phone over to him and let him share a little bit too.
Great. Okay. Hey,
hello,
Dan,
everybody.
Welcome, sir. How do you be?
Oh, absolutely awesome.
Cool.
In Rex's modesty, I have to tell you that he was incredible. I want to use a word, but I won't, but it was awesome.
All right.
It was beyond that word. That's not quite adequate, but he really put it out very well, very well received. I had an experience of light myself. I think that the whole session shifted. In fact, we even noticed one of the correction officers, he was watching and listening instead of watching the guys. He was taking in the material. We're doing some great work here. This is going to change the world right here, right in front of us. Well, that's my report.
That's the idea. That's the idea. Well, we had a request. I don't know if Rex, can you both hear the phone?
Yes.
Yeah, so
yes,
we had a request from Carrie, actually, in a text this morning that you guys might, if you'd be willing, to write some stuff up about it, and we'd put it in the blog on the website so that other people, she's got someone who had been in jail that's interested in knowing more about what's happening. So if you feel inclined, that would be pretty cool.
Yes.
Put it up on the Why Again blog. Yeah. If either or both of you would be willing to do that, that'd be fabulous.
Awesome. And we'll have our whole staff with us next week. It's just Dan and I, but Mitzi and Carol and Tony and Dan and I will all be here next week. So that's exciting as well. And I did lay down the criteria, and for all of us in the listening audience, the resistance was running rampant. You should have seen the discomfort. And the biggest thing they could come up with is they don't have time. It's just like,
yeah.
Okay. And I even had to rethink. I'm going, gosh, am I deleting anybody here and this is the wording, and I'm going to watch that pretty closely, that I'm by making them or requiring them to do the three a day. And the answer I got from Intuitive and from Ruka was, no, if they're going to learn the process, they're going to do three a day.
Yeah, so, I would make that a minimum commitment. I would tend to go more like five a day, but I would do that as a minimum. If they're going to get, they're buying a ticket to Laws of Living, and I'd say at least three a day is their ticket.
And that's
and they
exactly
have to show them to you.
Today.
You have to show them to you, and as you look at them, initial them so that they don't show you the same one next week.
Well, what I'm going to do is I've told them that we've got three a day, and we're going to go five more weeks, so you've got seven times three a day times 5 weeks. And at the end of the session, you bring your book in. I review that you actually did that many worksheets. And if you lose your book, you don't get certified. Because they lose their book, they lose their pens, they lose this, they lose that, and then somebody steals it. I want more. And it's very interesting. So there's been a lot happening. We're learning a lot about ourselves and about what's happening in this world. So we're going to go check in so we can get in front of the guard transfer so we can get there on time. So blessings and love to everyone, and thank you so much for all the love and support and energy. And we'll do our best to update everyone on the blog site.
Awesome. Well, it's a delight to hear. It's just awesome. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for what you're doing. Very cool.
And thank you. Thank you, everyone.
Dan, appreciation, blessings, and love.
I got it. You receive it.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye now. Take care. So everybody,
awesome.
If you would hold space, every Tuesday, going into a super high security prison in Ionia, Michigan, and taking the tools into a facility like that is a pretty intense thing to do. So, and that's interesting. Of course, for those who are listening or are new to the work, in the ancient Aramaic, the word Satan is not an uppercase word, the name of a person, but rather is a lowercase word, and it means the resistor, one who misleads. And so here's somebody who, I don't know how many hours a day they have to spend in their prison cell, and you can only do so much cleaning. Over the years, I found that being a captive audience, there's plenty of time to do their work, but I've not been in a prison before where we've made it a requirement. The 8-week series gives people an opportunity for certification, and so to get a certificate of completion, which helps them with parole boards and such, and gives them a way to measure that they've accomplished something. And so as Rex announces that the requirement is three a day, up comes the resistor. And in Aramaic, what that means is the resistor, one who misleads. And so their minds tell them a story of how I don't have enough time. And it's like, well, okay, but if you want to earn this certificate, this is how you do it. And their certificate is a ticket into another, it looks like it'll probably be an 8-week series, might be longer, Laws of Living course. And Rex is coming down in another few weeks to take Laws of Living, to study Laws of Living for the first time, and then take it back and start to present it in the prison system. It was originally designed for the prison system. And when the sheriff threw it out because he had empty jails, that was the end of Laws of Living in the prison system. And it's kind of just serendipitously showed up as an opportunity. And the prison that they're in is a super high security where people are in there for 25-plus years. So emptying them and threatening the income of the jail is not a problem. And so it looks like we've got a space where we can create a model program. And so there are five people in Lansing, Michigan, that are working with that. This prison is a disciplinary prison, where there's a pretty heavy-duty violent component there. And so working within that system to help to shift it. So thank you both for Dan and Rex for doing that, and for Carol and Tony and Mitzi for being part of the support for that. It's pretty fabulous. So, Jeannie, do we have any hands up or anything happening, hands up in the phone queue or anything happening in the chat room to be aware of?
We do have two hands up. The first one is area code 810. You're on the air.
Adam.
810, welcome to the show. Give us a name. Where are you calling from?
Hi, Mikey. Michael, hi, Jeannie. It's Adam from Adam.
Oh, hey, Adam. Welcome. Yeah, how do you be? Maybe you're going to start and go into that Attica prison and start to take some tools in. Who knows?
Yeah, the one in New York.
Aha. Well, that's right. You're in Attica, Michigan. That's that well-known prison is New York, isn't it? Okay.
Yeah.
So, what's
exactly
on your mind today, sir?
Well, I'm processing a lot of grief. We just got a verdict yesterday. We were going back to challenge the child custody arrangements, and it's we were not successful. And so I've just had a lot of stuff coming up, just like a lot of hopelessness and helplessness, rage and other things, and just like I'm trying to make sense, which I understand that's the booby prize of how upside down things could be, where people who lie are successful in court. I don't get that.
Well, one of the questions, maybe you can put it on mute. There's a lot of noise there. I don't know if you can quiet things a bit or put it on mute while we're talking. But one of my questions would be, you know, in the intensives, we ask the question, how does this look like your life when people are in some sort of a situation? So let's look at the word hopeless. How does it look like your life for life to seem hopeless? Is that a reality that you're acquainted with from past circumstances?
Definitely that's kind of reality I'm afraid with.
Okay. So then my input would be that the hopelessness is something that is the output and a reality from your mind that you can certainly pin on the circumstances with the courts. And the other perspective on that is you could recognize that I've been here, done this 87 different times with 42 different people. It's what my life has looked like. And you might check, I don't know if mom's listening, but mom, sister, dad, and see if any hopelessness has happened in their lives. And you could, instead of pretending that your hallucination is true, that what you're feeling in hopelessness is about what happened in court, you recognize that your hopelessness is a product of what's going on inside of you. And so you now begin to move in the direction of healing hopelessness, that you take the forgiveness process and you begin collapsing the output of your mind called hopelessness until you are literally physiologically incapable of generating a reality called hopelessness. Once you do that, then you'll see a whole different field of possibilities. Anyone who joins with you and lives in the hopelessness that's coming up would say that's insane, and, you know, from the perspective of that hopelessness, and it seems like it's about the court and it's about all that, they're right. But if you choose to be responsible and recognize I've done this over and over and over again, then perhaps you can see this as part of your creative process, and hopelessness produces hopelessness within as a reality produces situations upon which I can hang hopelessness and pretend that it's outside of me. That's one of the tricks of a very powerful mind. And you have a very powerful mind. But generationally, I can guarantee you've been taught that life is hopeless, and therefore, with your powerful mind, you create it exactly that way. So the next question I would ask would be, so the other word you used was rage. how does that look like your life? Is that something you visited often in your world and in your life?
Rage has been something that has been, something I've gotten in touch with more so since meeting the mother of my child.
Right.
So, but since then, in these situations where, I've been trying to be cooperative and respectful. I apologize, it's raining really hard here. And I'm in a car.
You're cutting in and out. I can hardly hear your voice now. So maybe you want to just put it on mute for a minute, and we'll go back to. So I do the same thing with rage. Just look at, okay, so I have a capacity for rage, and I can put the rage here. Or, and remember that rage is a drug. Rage is a way to anesthetize or to attempt to anesthetize things like hopelessness or whatever else is going on underneath. And I can only imagine that it might be things such as loss and grief. And as you dissolve the rage through forgiveness, you may find yourself getting in touch with a lot of loss and a lot of grief. And they'll be the next layer, the next depth of work that needs to be done to clean it up. And, you know, if you just do a little inquiry of your family history and the family system and look at, you know, oftentimes when we have things like grief and rage and hopelessness, helplessness, they become generational patterns that become buried by the hostility and the pretense that it isn't there. And anybody who gets close, there's an explosion of rage to keep it undercover and to keep it hidden. And so it's not a Dr. Feelgood place to be to say, all right, I'm going to deal with this. I choose to be the one. And Adam, I'm not sure what, I think you've been doing this work for about 2 years now. So I'm not sure. And I know your mom has been doing it. Your sister's been doing some of it. So the willingness to embrace and allow those things to pass from you, to be forgiven from your physiology, from your genetics, from your family system is a very courageous and a major piece of work to do. And, you know, we hold the space that that you've got the courage to do that and to be able to, you know, in a true human space, you know, we've got that definition of a human being, hold a newborn. If you think about your son, the first time you held him, what an awesome presence of love. If you could bring that awesome presence of love that you are to the space of the courtroom, to the space of the conflict, things would be shifting and changing. But if you bring a mind energetically, and the energetic influences of a mind with hopeless, helpless, fear, rage, then that powerful mind tends to join with other powerful minds to produce a result. And so sometimes
Michael,
it takes years to develop. Go ahead.
Oh, I apologize. I have a meeting with my lawyer right now, and I was just trying to call for before then, so he's ready for me
okay.
to come in.
Well, as you go in there, we are here breathing with you and invite you through your conversation with him to breathe and stay in touch with the human being that you are. And every time that you are tempted to forget, imagine holding your son once again for the first time and tapping into that presence of love. And just we join with you in remembering that's who you are and bring that to every event in your life. It'll change your life.
Yes, I appreciate that. Thank you for supporting me in that. And thank you for your support, love and support of everyone. So.
You got it, sir. We'll hold the space. The whole community holds the space for you as you go in there.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
All right, Adam. Love you. Breath of blessings. Bye-bye.
You too. Thanks. Bye.
And, you know, I say those words, love you, and just for our listening audience who might be new to what we're doing, I don't really mean that, because I know that we cannot love each other. The truth is, love is not a verb. It's not something we do to each other. It's what we are. But it's a term in our culture that denotes caring and support. And so I put that out because it's part of the language of our culture, but really knowing that what we mean is, I choose to be the space of love. I choose to stay connected to my true human essence, love, as I think of you, as I hold you in that space, as opposed to I am loving you. It's not a verb, it's a noun, it's who we are. And what our work together is about uncovering who we are and bringing who we are to every event in our world. And whatever it is that's going on, if we could just, you know, if a couple in conflict could just bring their human essence, the presence of love, to every discussion, all of the conflicting discussions would dissolve so rapidly. And so that's what we're here to work towards.
Okay, we have two more callers.
Oh, awesome. Let's go.
The first one is 816. I think it might be Magda.
Well, actually, Magda's 828. So 816, give us a name. Where are you calling from? Hello, area code 816. You are on the air.
Well, they just disappeared. So let's go to the next one. It's 970. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. It is Carrie in Michigan.
Welcome, young lady. Yes,
Bailey,
welcome.
Colorado. Great to hear both of those conversations. People that I know here absolutely adored Rex's presentation on Saturday. He did a workshop in Grand Rapids and was very appreciated by some of the attendees who I know. They think he's just, like he was saying, they really felt he was a very gifted teacher, very. So if he can hear that, I'm sure he's probably not listening anymore. And Adam, I don't know if he will listen to this again, but I got so much out of my dog Maggie's passing by putting myself in the place of learning to comprehend that my carbon-based data actually created the unfolding of that situation. And it really assisted me to go deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper into my genetic, what makes up my genetic dynamic. And it's been a really incredible process. So I just share that as a tool in case he is listening. I wanted to ask if you would please review quickly the goal canceling process, how it works, and I'm also very interested in what you pulled it from, what resources, what that Yeshua said, or what pieces of information kind of put it together, because I know it was, you put it together over a long period of time, and it didn't just happen instantly, so if you can give me a little bit of that, I just absolutely love to hear it, and it's always good to have a review on it.
Well, in the Aramaic language, whenever the word forgiveness is used, the word there is actually shebag. And the word shebag has been translated by the Greeks as forgiveness, but it actually translates to cancel, to let loose, or to untie. So in the Aramaic, where you hear Yeshua saying, you must, the Greeks translate, you must forgive from your heart the wrongs of your brother. In Aramaic, he's saying, as we just had the conversation with Adam, in the case, let's say, for instance, of the hopelessness, what I would, if I were speaking in that Aramaic context to Adam, I'd say, Adam, and he's seeing the judge is accepting lies from his former, and so he's lost custody of his son. So he's seeing his wife, for instance, as a liar and in hopelessness. So in the culture's language, she really, you know, makes me hopeless. And so Yeshua would say, but Adam, you must shebag, you must cancel from your heart that wrong that you think is her causing you hopelessness.
you must remove from your mind that which you just put into your brain's image of another. And because you're feeling it, the hopelessness is yours. If you choose to live a human life, you can't go around with the capacity for hopelessness. Elsewise, with the capacity for hopelessness, you will continuously resonate those who will seem to be the cause of your hopelessness. My input in regard to Maggie would be that your unconscious dynamics did not create that, but they supported it and drew it and helped to create it. I wouldn't step so far in as to take responsibility for those things happening outside of you as having been caused with you, but it's certainly a cooperative effort. So when it comes to canceling, what is it that you cancel? Do you just say, well, I cancel hopelessness? Well, it won't get you very far if you try that. It could be helpful, but there's a more comprehensive technology in the Aramaic, and this is the worksheet process that we talk about that's on the Why Again site under the Start Here button up in the left. And just kind of the short form of it, and it takes a thousand times to hear it to build the brain cells, and I've taught the canceling process for over 30 years now until just the last couple of years, without really understanding the why and how of it, being able to explain it, just taught it because it worked. But the short form of why it works is that any given individual has a database. Let's again ask Adam to be our example here, and we'll call him back and suggest that he review the show. So what we know from Adam's language is there's hopelessness, there's helplessness, there's rage in there. So they were some of the words that he used. So if I walk around as a human form, not necessarily a human being, but as a human form with rage and helpless and hopeless, then I'm literally continuously sending out an energetic wave. I had the privilege several decades ago of getting to do some work with a gentleman named Marcel Vogel, who was a 23-year senior scientist from IBM. Marcel had the instrumentation in the laboratory with which to take a picture of the high energy waves that leave the mind when we think a thought. So literally, if I hold hopelessness, I'm sending up a field that says, hey, is there anybody in town who can help to show me this hopeless feeling that I've been trying to hide from myself? And as I continue to radiate that influence, I'll tend to incline somebody to action. And when they take that action, their action will resonate my hopelessness. When it does, the way that my mind will use hopelessness in blaming them is that I'm going to have a goal for them to be different than they are. Like, for instance, in this case, with his former lying in court, I'm going to have a goal for her to tell the truth. So if my goal is for her to tell the truth, when I load that goal in my mind, there's some Harvard research that says that in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells fire, the max amount of data that goes into conscious awareness is 9 bits. There's just a little tiny framework. So something has to select which 9 bits of data are used. It is our goals that determine which data we use. And you'll notice that you've never been upset with somebody in your life unless you had a goal for them that they weren't achieving for you. Notice, there's there's no upset toward everybody who's cooperating and doing what you want them to do. But if I load a goal, for instance, in the courtroom for somebody to tell the truth, my mind is going to filter with that goal the data based in hopelessness related to telling the truth. And I'll take my hopelessness and put it into my brain's image of them lying. I'll still be feeling the hopelessness, but I'll be sure that it's because they lied, not because that's content in my carbon-based memory, inside of my structure. So I literally produce an image of them as the cause of my hopelessness. My mind shows me a picture that See, they caused me to feel this. That's where Yeshua would say, you must forgive from your heart that which you just put into your brain's image of your brother. How do you do that? Well, the shebag piece, the canceling of the goal, the way that you want it to be, is the Aramaic meaning of shebag, of forgive. You cancel the driver that you loaded into your mind. Your mind has to have a driver. It has to have something that tells it which 9 bits of data to load up and use. And so when I hold a goal for someone and someone isn't fulfilling that goal, that causes my mind to use data based in hostility or fear, but it's data that when I talk about it, I say it isn't mine. How do I say it isn't mine? You really made me feel hopeless when that happened. And so that language, when I say you made me, and then I follow it with the word of something that's going on inside of me that refers to my own mind's content, I'm now in denial. In denial, by talking about someone else as the cause of something inside of me, I am cut off from the cause of that something inside of me. How do I get restored to the place where that cause is so that I can change it? And here's the trick in the Aramaic technology. You recognize that the goal is the recruiter of the brain cells that hold content called hopelessness and build pictures of what we call others. When I cancel or shebag the goal, forgive, then by canceling that goal, it collapses my mind's output from carbon-based memory. It just takes the driver out that causes my mind to see things that way, and that collapses. At the same time as that collapses, it opens an energetic pathway back directly into the part of my mind that holds the hopelessness, which a moment ago when I was saying they made me hopeless, I had no access to because it was in my dissociated mind. When I deny, I dissociate from what's inside of me. So with no access, I have no ability to change it, no ability to get rid of it, and I go merrily on my way with the belief that this is somebody else's fault and they're making me feel this, as opposed to recognizing I'm feeling this because it's something inside of me. If it's not inside of me, I can't feel it. So by canceling the goal, that collapses what's in the 9-bit mind. It opens a pathway to the dissociated content. Now I can access directly the dissociated content of hopelessness. I can bring that forward to exposure to the presence of love. And when I bring that forward, you know, step 4 in the worksheet, you're working to bring forward this space of connected love. And when I bring that forward in the presence of that connected love, what happens is anything that my mind holds that is not true begins to energetically dissolve. So by canceling the goal, the problem is not the goal, the problem is the content of the mind. But by canceling the goal, by looking at every situation in my life where I have upset and I'm talking about somebody else and therefore living in dissociation, by canceling those goals, that gives me direct access to the part of my mind that holds my pain, my trauma, my turmoil, all the things that rip me off from my human life. And then the next step, step 5B in the worksheet, is where I ask the super processor to go to work. I recognize, as you know, a lot of the work that you've done, Carrie, with your Middle Eastern genetics has been about some of the insanity of the generations. And so realizing that my own mind has such a tiny bit of processing power, I realize that there is an elemental force in the universe that in Aramaic was called Ruach HaKodesh. The Greeks translated those words from the Aramaic as the Holy Spirit. There's nothing about a disembodied spirit being in those words, Ruach HaKodesh. What it speaks of is a literal elemental force in us. It is a force which is feminine. that when invited into activity, it won't do this automatically. You got free will. Nobody's touching your junk. But when you invite it into activity, that part of your mind that you just opened and made accessible, that part of the mind that has been hidden and dissociated from, is now free game for Ruka Dikuja, for the super processor. And so that's the elemental force or the power that can process us right back through our genetics and clean the whole thing up. And it's the canceling of the goal that is the key way into that part of the mind that otherwise remains subverted and only shows up as a picture of how other people are the problem in my life. So our invitation is to anyone who's in any form of hostility or fear, and they're the two basic things that the mind uses to take us out of the truth of who we are as love, as our true created essence. Whenever hostility or fear comes forward, it's because I hold content based in hostility or fear. If I only see it indirectly, when I see a picture of you as the cause, I'm not directly exposing that dissociated content to love, therefore I can't change it. So by canceling the goal, I collapse the projection that it's about you. I now have direct access to pathways open in that part of my mind. I bring that part of my mind forward to awareness in the presence of love, and that begins to dissolve. Bang, bang, bang. Just starts to fall apart until I get to the point. And many people, you know, over the years have shared with me, well, you know, I had this issue, and, you know, it's been in my life for so long. I've been doing worksheets on it. And yesterday somebody came up, and what they did would just, in the past, would have just, I'd have been blown away with that issue. It would have been so overwhelming. And what I'm seeing is, like, where did this go? I'm looking around, wondering, where's this, you know, energetic response that I usually have that's so insane? And I realize that I've dissolved it, and it's just not there anymore. It's just not there anymore. So that's kind of, in a nutshell, the core of it. Is that adequate for addressing the question you were asking?
That was very excellent. I really appreciate it. I just took about 5 pages of notes. Would you address resistance and denial just shortly?
Sure. Well, denial, again, is we have a very specific definition of denial. When I'm feeling something going on inside of me and I talk about somebody else's cause, I'm in denial. That's all I need to do. You made me angry, sad, afraid, hateful, hurt. You hurt me. That really upset me. Oh, that situation's very painful. All of those sentences are denial in action. The result of denial in action is that the part of me that's creating those things, that wants to pretend it's you that's doing it to me, is now hidden from me by my denial. So I am now dissociated from the very content of my mind that I want to access and change. So through denial, I dissociate. And now what I've dissociated from is no longer mine to change. It is the canceling of the goal that recruits the part of my mind that I've dissociated from that empowers me to go in and find that part of my mind and clean it up. Now, if you've got somebody who's lived in total unconsciousness, total, you know, this is everybody's fault, my father, my mother, my brother, my sister, my cousin, my aunt, my uncle, my neighbor, the guy down the block, the guy on the other side of the world, the guy that's a different race, a different color, a different creed, I've never met him, but boy, he sure causes me a lot of pain, all the denial that goes, when you say to that person, well, have you ever noticed that you've been through that 87 different times with 42 different people. You've watched your mother go through it. You've watched your father go through it. You've watched your brother go through it. You've watched your sister go through it. You remember Uncle John? You remember you watched him go through it and Aunt Mary? Do you remember that? Oh, yeah, yeah, I remember that. Okay. So notice your denial. You're pretending that something outside of you is causing that. And when I point out to you that what you're feeling is yours and the only way to change it is to be responsible for it, notice that you go into resistance. No, 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 this isn't about me. And then you tell me your lie, your story, how it's all about them. So in Aramaic, Satan is the resistor, one who misleads. So when someone is unconscious and confronted with the truth that they're responsible for what's going on inside of them and that they're the cause of what's going on inside of them, and that what's going on inside of them reflects on the outside, and it's all done with smoke and mirrors, then they go into resistance. And their mind tells them a lie. They are misled. You know, it's like, again, with our first call with Rex there, where, you know, he's telling these guys, he's now set up a requirement. Here's your ticket to your certificate for completing this 8 weeks, and your ticket to Laws of Living. You do 3 worksheets a day. And, you know, a worksheet takes 10, maybe 15 minutes to do. So we're asking these guys in prison to spend 45 minutes a day, and they're telling him, we don't have time. You know, so that's called resistance. And notice, and I guarantee these guys will have a whole story about how it's all, you know, there's no time, I can, and on and on. And, you know, the guard said this, and my cellmate said that, and on and on and on. And there'll be a whole story, a whole misleading story. So when I go into resistance, my mind has got a whole hallucination about why it's true about something outside of me, but not true about, well, yeah, I have been through this 87 different times with 42 different people. It's got nothing to do with me. It's all their fault.
So story is often resistance.
Oh, yeah, the story is resistance. One of the things, if you remember when you came to the 9-day intensive last year, one of the things I started out with is, you know, I'm really not interested in your story. And what we want you to do is get over your story, tell the truth about yourself, and show up as love as quickly as possible. And, you know, I point out, if you remember in that intensive, that everybody in the room has got 1,000 stories, and we could spend the next 9 days telling our stories and not get any work done. So if there's something I need to know about your situation to support you, I want to hear it. But if you need to get into the, well, then when he did this, and then she did that, and then you should have seen it 6 weeks ago when this happened, and then 4 weeks ago, and then, oh, back 8 weeks. And, like, you know, all you had to do was say you were upset. You didn't have to tell me about 4 weeks ago, 6 weeks ago, 8 weeks ago, yesterday, last week, last month, Harry, Bill, Mary, Charlie, Penny. All you had to do is say, I had upset about this. So what we invite people to do in the intensive is just to bottom line the issue rather than have to tell their story. And being stuck in one's story means that one is going to create out of their story over and over and over again. So we invite people to collapse their story, forgive, and get on with their own lives.
How might you address, you know, somebody who doesn't have a big background in this work who wants to tell a story every time they see you?
Well, I would probably do just what you heard me just describe. You know, I realize you got a story and everybody's got a story, but, you know, I'd rather hang out with you than your story. By the way, have you ever held a newborn child? How about imagine you're holding that newborn, and if you were to describe the essence of the newborn, what would it be? If they're truthful and honest and they've held a newborn, they're going to tell you something about love. Then I might say, well, you know, I know that's the truth of who you are and that you're not your story. And so how about breathing with me for a minute, and let's get back to who we are as love. And let's just let go of that story. It's like it's getting old. You know, haven't you told it enough yet? Now, you might have some people that are ready to hear that and go, oh, yeah, you know, that's cool. I hadn't thought of it that way. That's cool. Okay, yeah, let's do it. And you might have other people who are going to be very, very upset that you're not willing to support them in their story. And then, of course, then you'll become the problem in your life, and you'll get to pay Joan the Baptist. And they'll want to take your head off, and you want to make sure, you know, if you're going to do this level of work with people, that you develop those two skills that John the Baptist did not develop, and that was you got to know when to duck and when to hold the mirror up. Elsewise, people are going to want to literally take off your head, or figuratively.
Cool. Awesome. Thank you so much, Michael. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely delighted. We hold the space.
Okay. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, bless
I want to
thank
add
you,
something to Terry's question there.
I want to add something to Carrie's question there, kind of a twofold question. One, when somebody has two different goals that pull them in different directions, is that what kind of causes a split mind or a bipolar?
It's called schizophrenia or bipolar. If you teach people to cancel their goals, the schizophrenia and the bipolar will tend to disappear. You know, the bipolar person has a goal, and at one point their goal is one that's really they're turned on to and excited about. And, man, I am so high, I'm so ready to rock and roll. And then when I don't have any control over my mind and up come some other goals that are goals that are about how I'm a worm and I need to be treated badly and, you know, I always lose and I'm a victim and then all of a sudden I'm now lower than a snake's belly. And if you teach someone to cancel the goals on both sides of that game, they'll become more and more integrated and more able to take charge of their lives and just live in a normal game. Or, you know, play the game normally. Whatever normal is.
Awesome. And the other thing, and before I ask this question, if you don't get a signal that time is up, normally we would have 4 minutes to go, but the timer on the switchboard is saying an hour and 4 minutes. So I don't know if they've given us a two-hour slot today because of yesterday or what.
I didn't know.
So you may not get the signal to stop here in a few minutes. The second question happened to do with what care. Okay. Second thing Carrie was talking about, and you were answering that anytime you say you made me, so that also goes for if you say you made me happy or you made me joyous or you made me feel love, or so not just the bad things but the good things too?
Yeah, it's our world loves for us to be codependent, because when we're codependent, when we blame or give credit to someone else for being the power in our lives, then we give up our own power. And when we give up our own power, we make awesome slaves. We're really great slaves in that state. So both sides of the spectrum, someone else is not and cannot be responsible for your happiness nor your pain. And if you're pinning it all on someone else, now, can you recognize that you've got a companion that is living in the same vein as you are and choosing to move in the directions you are, and together you have a blast? Absolutely. But it's no different to say you make me really happy or that made me happy. When I say that made me happy, I'm now in denial. Something outside of me is the cause of something inside of me. Happiness is a choice that I make inside of me. If my choice is now...
Just lost Michael.
Yeah, I thought maybe it was just my phone, but yeah,
nope,
he disappeared.
I heard a beep and he was gone.
Yeah. So finishing that sentence that he was saying then is that even to say you made me happy is also being in denial. And those worksheets sometimes, I don't know about you, Dr. Tim, but sometimes those are a little bit more challenging for me to fill out, doing worksheets on a trigger that made me feel good and then what was the goal, because usually when you feel good, they have actually fulfilled that goal, and
well,
then to cancel the goal.
Usually I just put that I want them to keep it up.
And then canceling that and being willing for them to not keep it up.
Right, because I'm just opening the space for me to realize I'm the one who has created it in the first place. And if I put that kind of pressure on somebody in a relationship that it's their job to make me happy, I'm just dooming the relationship.
Right, exactly. I think Michael's back with us now.
Well, I see.
I'm in full agreement, and we're down
to
about. Yeah, thank you for picking that up. We're down to about 30 seconds, so we thank you all for being here, and bring a stranger to the show tomorrow. 9-day Why Is This Happening to Me Again intensive starts on Monday. If you're ready to crank your work up to the next level, come see us at Heartland, and have the best year yet of your eternal life. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present that internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.
Evolving continuously.